I would like to take this opportunity of welcoming you all to Côte d'Ivoire. And obviously, before I start saying anything, I would like to wish you all a very bright, prosperous, and happy New Year. And I would also like to wish you success in all your undertakings for 2018. Well, for some of us, we're in Côte d'Ivoire. I always like to remind people of what happened, because they always remind us of what happened. But as you can see, some of you must have had a lot of stories about Côte d'Ivoire, but we're here, and we're making sure that we continue our work with respect to the various objectives that we have in terms of feeding Africa, in terms of making sure that the 70% of the people that are responsible for feeding Africa are working within an environment that is actually conducive to them. And these three-day meetings, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished participants, is an important step in this process. Now, the process of realizing a major objective of all African states, and I don't think it's strange, we all want to make sure that we are feeding Africa. But at the same time, it is important to note that this particular objective has been embraced by key development agencies and partners. And I would like, at this point in time, to mention the African Development Bank, the World Bank, IFAD, CORAFRECAD, and of course, most importantly, our National Agricultural Research and Extension Systems, and their partners, those that are in the international research scene that are supporting a national cultural research system. I would like to express a special thanks to these institutions, because they, in fact, have been at the foundation of this particular meeting that we're having. And to put this meeting into context, all of these institutions that I've mentioned, and I would like also to add AGRA and FAO, but I would like to associate all of these institutions. They have been investing in programs for agricultural transformation in Africa. And it is important to mention some of these programs that have actually been implemented by our national institutions in partnership with international research institutions. The West African Agricultural Productivity Program, I'm sure you've heard about this. We've had very good results. And this program was focused on productivity, increasing productivity of certain commodities. Now we're seeing this program being transformed into something much more important, because we have realized that there are other issues that we should take into consideration, especially the transformation issue. So productivity, we have looked at it, and it has been revealed from the results that we have that we should be looking at transformation, which is, I think, is a heavily packed word. But to make it simple, I think we should be looking at the whole value chain, looking at its performance, and try to see how this is contributing to food security in an inclusive manner, that is including all our different stakeholders that are involved in these various value chains. I'm sure you've also heard about TAT. We call it fondly TAT, which is Technology for African Agricultural Transformation, which is a project that is actually driving one of the five highs of the African Development Bank, Feed Africa. And the aim of this particular project is to ensure that technologies are actually making a difference within the value chain, so contributing to the performance of the value chain and bringing returns on investments. And obviously, the various investment agencies such as IFAD, the African Development Bank itself, and the World Bank have also invested a lot in value chains. In general, the performance of value chains, and obviously, with respect to rice, which is now one of the most important food commodity in Africa, this value chain has been at the forefront of all of these programs. And the rice value chain approach has been proven to be the most ideal approach if we want rice to adequately contribute to transforming agriculture. We know that lots of studies, some people are saying, why are we talking about rice value chain? We've done lots of studies in different countries on value chain, on the rice value chain, with the objective of assessing its performance. But the question still remains, and we shouldn't be afraid to say it. Are rice value chain activities transformational enough for the commodity to contribute effectively to the process of feeding Africa? That's the big question. And this is what this particular workshop is going to examine, that particular question. So obviously we have been doing value chain work, rice value chain work, but is it transformational? Is it contributing effectively to feeding Africa? So these are the issues. Again, if you have read the concept note, we spoke about Asia, having some learning lessons from Asia. But we all know, for those who are in the business, that in Asia there has been a rapid transformation in the rice value chain. Very rapid transformation. Upstream, in Asia, we have seen that farmers are undertaking capital-led intensification. They are participating rapidly in the growing markets for land rental, fertilizer, pesticides, seed, irrigation water. We're seeing that they have shifted from subsistence to commercial farms, and they're concentrating land holdings. So there's a lot of things happening upstream in the rice value chain in Asia in general. Midstream, we are seeing wholesale and milling entrepreneurs. They are investing in equipment. They are increasing scale. And they are diversifying into higher quality. The rice segments, the value chain segments, are undergoing consolidation, vertical coordination, and integration. Mills are packaging and branding. They are building agents of network agents in wholesale markets. Large mills are also building direct relationship with supermarkets. Downstream, the retail segment is undergoing a supermarket revolution. These guys are actually dealing, they're supplying supermarkets. Now, are we seeing that in Africa? These are some of the questions that we should be asking ourselves. In Asia, the government is not involved in the process, but it is enabling transformation through infrastructural investments. So where are we on this in Africa? Now, this particular workshop will explore the rice value chain within that context, the competitiveness of a rice value chain. We'll try to see whether we can learn some experience from Asia. We can look at some of the lessons. There are going to be presentations. And in this respect, I wouldn't like to actually dwell into the details, but just say this is what we're up to. This is the job that we have to do. And I would like to wish all of us great success in this endeavor, and in particular, end up by thanking especially the World Bank and CORAF Wecard for having associated Africa Rice in this very, very interesting initiative. Once again, with these opening words, remarks, I would like to welcome you to Côte d'Ivoire, Abidjan, and to Africa Rise's office in Abidjan. Thank you very much.
Monsieur le directeur général de Africa Rise, Monsieur le représentant de la Banque mondiale, Monsieur le représentant de la Banque africaine de développement, Monsieur le représentant de la FAO, Monsieur le représentant de Agra, Mesdames et Messieurs, en vos rangs et qualités, chers collègues, je m'exprime ici au nom de Dr Abdou Tinkwano, directeur exécutif du CORAF, qui n'a pas pu être parmi nous ce matin pour vous délivrer le message qu'il m'a chargé de lire ici. Mesdames et messieurs, chers collègues, la rencontre qui nous réunit aujourd'hui revêt une importance capitale au regard du moment de sa survenance, mais aussi du thème qui lui a été conféré. En effet, depuis 2008, les gouvernements des pays de l'Afrique subsaharienne ainsi que le Centre du riz pour l'Afrique ont consenti de gros efforts pour accroître la production de riz, dont je ne me hasarderai pas à démontrer devant vous son importance économique, son importance sociale et son importance culturelle. Toutes choses que vous maîtrisez mieux que quiconque, puisqu'étant des experts dans la filière. Ces efforts, disais-je, ont été faits pour la disponibilité des semences et des engrais, entre autres, ce qui a permis d'augmenter la production de paddy au rythme de 5% par an en moyenne. Selon une publication récente de Jeune Afrique, la production sénégalaise a bondi de 16% en 2016 et celle de la Côte d'Ivoire a triplé depuis 2011, pour ne citer que ces deux pays. Mesdames et messieurs, comme vous le savez, la population de notre continent atteindra, selon les prévisions des experts, les 2 milliards d'habitants en 2030, dont la plus grande partie vivra en zone urbaine et périurbaine et qu'il nous faudra nourrir. Oui, il nous faudra nourrir une population en constante augmentation avec l'aliment de base qui est devenu le riz, dont la production locale ne couvre actuellement qu'environ 55% des besoins. Ainsi, nous importons 30 à 45% de nos besoins, mais cela ne représente qu'environ 7% du tonnage mondial du riz commercialisé. C'est dire donc, mesdames et messieurs, toute l'importance de cet atelier qui vise à mettre en place des chaînes de valeur riz en Afrique de l'Ouest, plus particulièrement en Côte d'Ivoire, au Ghana, au Mali, au Nigeria et au Sénégal, afin d'impulser une dynamique nouvelle à la production de riz dans notre sous-région. Je suis confiant que cette entreprise, pilotée par Africa Rise, dont le seul nom évoque la réussite et le développement de la filière riz en Afrique, en collaboration avec la Banque mondiale, un partenaire de toujours et de tous les temps, et avec la participation effective de vous tous, cette entreprise sera donc couronnée de succès. Mesdames et messieurs, je ne saurais conclure mon propos sans vous souhaiter une très bonne et heureuse année 2018, une année remplie de succès, mais aussi une année de bonheur et de paix. Je remercie bien sincèrement mon frère et ami Dr Harold Roy Makore, directeur général de Africa Rise, et tout son personnel pour avoir associé le CORAF à cette rencontre. Mes remerciements vont également à l'endroit de Dr Abdoulaye Touré de la Banque mondiale pour tout le soutien apporté à notre organisation. Je peux vous assurer que le CORAF ne ménagera aucun effort pour l'atteinte des objectifs de cette entreprise dans laquelle nous tous nous engageons aujourd'hui afin de la mener à bon port. Je souhaite plein succès à notre atelier et vous remercie de votre aimable attention. Voilà le message de Monsieur le directeur exécutif du CORAF qu'il m'avait chargé de vous délivrer. Je vous remercie.
Good morning, everybody. Your Excellency, the Executive Director of CORAF, represented by Dr. Ousmane Ndoye, yeah? The DG of Africa Rice, my friend, old friend and colleague, Dr. Macaulay, representative of World Bank, Dr. Abdoulaye, my good friend, Dr. Malu Ndavi, we meet everywhere, we meet again here, of IFAD. I want to begin. I have a speech that was prepared for me, but I've put it aside. I want to talk to you from the heart. Yeah. How many of you here is a miller, a rice miller? Raise your hands. How many of you here are rice millers? Wow. Wow. I can see my good friend Umza there. Yeah. Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I want to begin by telling you a story. It's a true story. And that's why I ask the millers to raise their hands. It's a story not on rice, it's on cassava, but it's very relevant to rice. It's a story that comes from Asia, Thailand. When I began my career as a young scientist, cassava breeder, at the International Center of Tropical Agriculture in Cali, Colombia, there were only two cassava mills in Thailand, only two starch mills in Thailand, only two. Today, they have 200 starch mills in Thailand. The question is, how did that happen? Very simple. The millers approached the government and told the government, we see a big market for cassava starch, but we don't have two things. One, we don't have the right varieties, the yield, the starch content, and secondly, we don't have the enabling environment. Fix this for us, and the rest will follow. The government approached the International Center for Tropical Agriculture and said, can you give us a variety? We have today varieties of 18% starch. The millers say they want 28% starch. We will do the enabling environment. And that's what happened. The variety KU50 was developed, 28% starch. It took off. The whole thing took off. The government also put in policies to support them. It took off. Ladies and gentlemen, if we make these guys successful as millers, we will not have to import rice. We will not have to bring in rice from any country into Africa, because these guys will control the market. Look at Umza. Umza started with one mill. How many mills do you have today, sir?
Three.
He has three mills. I hope next time we meet you, we'll have 10. Why do you have three? Why do you have three mills? Tell us why you have three mills, Umza.
All protocol observed. It's simple as you mentioned. The policy that was made by the government at that time when we started, it gives the encouragement and the enabling environment to prosper in the rice milling. Even though there are some hinges that we need to clear with the help of international organizations like this, but it's the enabling environment and the encouragement by the then government that help us to be where we are now. Not only Umza, when you left Nigeria, let me give you a short background of Nigeria, since now you are in Ivory Coast. You left the country with 18 rice mill. Today we have 26, and more are coming. The milling capacity have risen to more than 1.2 million of paddy per annum. These are the development we are having. But there are still some challenges that, if permitted, will bring it to the table here for the whole group to look at it and start discussing how to solve. It's a similar problem for the whole region. I'm discussing with a friend here from Ghana. He also mentioned the same thing to me, that if permitted, we'll bring it to the table here so that the whole group will start thinking of how to solve the problem. But really, I want to mention, I don't want to mention name, but I have to. During the reign of Mr. Adesina as the Minister of Agriculture in Nigeria, he has given the good enabling environment for the rice sector to prosper. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Umza. I will end my speech by just saying the African Development Bank wants to accompany you on this journey by supporting delivery to farmers of the best technologies, varieties, good agricultural practices, and processing. That's how we can accompany you. We will do our very best to, at the country level, also provide loans for the countries to scale up those varieties, those processing, and good agricultural practices. At the regional level, we are working very hard also with FARA and the SROs, including CORAF, to help with regional policies that harmonize tariffs, trade tariffs, so that you don't have perverse incentives to smuggle rice, and also supporting them so that a variety released in Mali can be grown in Burkina Faso, a variety released in Burkina Faso can be grown in Niger, so we don't have to go through the same cycles. That's how I'm supporting you. But the truth about this is that we need to figure out what the millers need to make more money. Bottom line, the farmers, the millers, the marketers, they all need to make more money. And then we will push out imported rice. Thank you very much.
I'll start by saying, about 8 months ago, I was called by my supervisor, the Associate Vice President in IFAD. And I found a group of four other people, and we were presented with a simple question. Of all what IFAD does in Asia and in Africa, identify, give me two value chains that we should invest in and why. A simple question. We haggled the whole day, we couldn't come up with anything. The following day, we were called back. We were threatened he will lock us in until we give him two. After a lot of discussions, we settled on two agri-food systems, cassava and rice. Now, why? Because from the discussions, it emerged that, of course, these two commodities, let me call them that, food security, income generation, youth employment, it has got all that in it. That was one thing. The second issue is if our investments in these two, especially with regard to the technology development. We've been involved in rice, development of abiotic and biotic tolerance varieties in Africa, and a lot more even in Asia under the program called Strasa. So, based on that, I would say that we came up with the next steps, and we agreed that the next step we have to capitalize on productivity. We need to actually look at these two value chains, see what works, why it has worked, and where it has worked. Now, about December, the DG came to see the president of IFAD. And during the discussion, he said that there would be at this meeting. When I looked at the agenda of this meeting, it is exactly going to give me what worked, why it worked, and where it worked. More so, you've got our colleagues from Asia. I am here, and I'm glad to be here, because at the end of this, I believe out of why, where, and how, I'll have filled those, and I'll take to my supervisor, this is what I hear. And based on that, we will be focusing a lot more, especially in value chains in West Africa. And I'm hoping that Africa Rise, you are going to move into East Africa, because especially in East Africa, it has become glaringly obvious maize is not the way to go. Rice is the way to go. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and very good morning to everybody. My name is Hiroshi Hiraoka. I'm a senior advisor of the Japan International Cooperation Agency. But actually, I'm quite an elusive man, and I started with my career with the FAO, and I also stayed in Agra for 4 years, then the World Bank, and then finally I came back to Japan May last year, after 20 years of absence from Japan. So I'm very happy to be back here again in this part of Africa. And actually, if I look back my career and then exposure with the rice sector in Africa for the last 15 years, I really feel the changes. And when I arrived in this area, when I started this job, it was only production. Now the language is totally transformed into how African rice can sell to the markets. It's a quality, it's a price, it's a competitiveness. This is a dialogue we are seeing. These are dialogue changes that we are seeing, and really want to congratulate for that. And still, Mr. Chairman, there are some steps further to go in order to make this story complete. And if you look at, and then this is important not only for feeding for Africa, but considering the fact that the remaining natural resources available globally, most of those untapped potential lies in on this continent. It's not only for Africa, it's feeding the world in the long term. And then Africa must be ready for that. And now it is a time for preparing for it by feeding the domestic food value chain, food market. Rice can be one example, but this idea could be expanded for other commodities too. Good point about this continent is you already have established value chain, especially for the exporting commodities, cacao, tea, coffee. This could be one way to guide Africa for the next level of food value chain, food crop value chain. But at the same time, the experience coming from the other parts of the world, especially from Asia, and how they got over the challenges of establishing their rice value chain would be another thing to look at. And this is why I'm quite happy that this meeting will promote the exchanges between the more established rice value chain players in Asia, as well as the emerging power coming from Africa. Having said this, Mr. Chairman, let me close my congratulations, and I really wish a very fruitful discussion. Thank you very much indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Fadel Jame. I'm the regional head of Agra for West Africa. And my being here is a reflection of the importance of the topic, but also being invited by a partner organization, which is Africa Rice. I think what I want to say is for the last 10 years, Agra has invested significantly in building seed system across African countries. I think we have learned a lot on how to build downstream delivery system, seed, fertilizer, extension. We have also invested in market access and policy. For the next 5 years, our board has approved a strategy that focuses mainly on agriculture transformation, driving impact at scale. And building on our track record, we are focusing on key elements, starting with country support. This is why I'm very pleased to have the countries here. Because one of the things we learn is, and I think it's true also for Africa, you will not have a transformation if you don't have country commitments. I think the nature of the country's investment and the progress that they make will determine the future of agriculture. The second element is we believe in public-private partnership. as our friend from African Development Bank mentioned, key to unlocking, you know, the potential of any value chain is to have the private sector play their key role, especially the downstream part. Now, this comes with many prerequisites, obviously. You need policy, you need finance, and you need smart partnership. And I think the opportunity here is we can partner around rice, but also other commodities. I mean, besides rice, we have prioritized in the countries where we work in West Africa, some key commodities like maize, sorghum, cowpeas. So I think we are eager in this discussion to figure out how we can partner and make sure that we can deliver at scale. So I think this is what I want to say to start off. And we're here mainly to learn from the countries and see how we can strengthen our partnership in supporting the countries drive their own agenda. Thank you very much.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen and colleagues. My name is Anadumba Peter. I'm the regional officer for South-South Cooperation for FAO in the regional office. I also double as the regional focal point for rice. Now, why South-South Cooperation and rice together? It's very simple. And FAO rice for us is a priority crop. We use South-South Cooperation more or less to facilitate this exchange of technology, innovations, ideas among the member countries. As we all know, FAO is championing the course on rice. We have this rice initiative program in Africa, where I see most of the countries present here. So for us here, we are here to support Africa rice, basically to support these countries implement. Just as the Director for Agriculture and African Development Bank said, it's more about the enabling environment. I think in FAO we've seen that once countries have a strong enabling environment, the production of rice increases, and then the value chain is also enhanced. But we shouldn't forget one thing. It has always been production. And I think the next step should be, how do we enhance the end market? How do you look at value addition? I think when I look at Asia, they've done a lot. And I think we are here to learn from each other, basically from Asia, but also from other countries, because I know within sub-Saharan Africa, there are other countries that have improved dramatically with regards to rice processing, for instance, Nigeria. So basically, just to reaffirm that FAO is committed to supporting the CIPRISA initiative, and will definitely want to work together with Africa Rice to see this through. So with this, I wish all of you a good deliberation. Thank you, Aaron.
Je voudrais sincèrement vous remercier. Et en tant que pays hôte, c'est un plaisir pour la Côte d'Ivoire de recevoir ces éminentes personnalités. J'espère que vous n'allez pas entendre le coup de feu. Vous êtes en Afrique, on en est un peu habitué en Côte d'Ivoire. Heureusement pour nous, les fusils ne font pas ça, ils étaient comme ça. Donc tranquillisez-vous, à ce niveau, il n'y a pas de problème. Actuellement, vous allez faire une semaine en Côte d'Ivoire, c'est la période de l'Harmattan. C'est un vent sec qui vient du nord, qui fatigue un peu, qui fait souffrir un peu le pot. Mais c'est juste passager. Et en principe, à partir du mois prochain, les premières pluies vont s'installer. On va avoir donc le semi du riz dans la moitié sud de la Côte d'Ivoire. Et la moitié nord, c'est à partir du mois de juin. Vous vraiment vous situez la bienvenue. En Côte d'Ivoire, on appelle ça l'Aquaba. Quand on vient en Côte d'Ivoire, en général, de deux choses l'une, selon que vous êtes du nord ou bien du sud, quand l'étranger arrive au sud, quand on lui donne de l'eau, on lui demande des nouvelles. C'est-à-dire, il doit nous dire pourquoi il est là. Et dans certaines régions, c'est le village qui vous donne d'abord la nouvelle. Chez nous, ici, c'est comme ça, c'est comme ça, c'est comme ça. Il y a eu des décès, ainsi de suite. Donc, c'est ce que je fais actuellement. Vous dites que vous êtes à l'Harmattan, c'est bon, il n'y a plus de coups de feu. Donc, vous allez passer un beau séjour ici. Ceci étant, en ce qui concerne le sujet est très important pour nous, l'Afrique, et la Côte d'Ivoire. D'abord, les échanges qu'on aura entre pays, et puis avec les experts que nous avons. Je pense que chacun va apprendre comme les interventions des uns et des autres. Et pour ce qui concerne la Côte d'Ivoire, si vous regardez la courbe de production, depuis 2011, nous sommes montés. Et puis depuis 2015, nous stagnons. Nous stagnons. 1,4 million, 1,4 million, 1,4 million. Depuis 2015. Le représentant de la Banque mondiale est arrivé pile dans la situation que la Côte d'Ivoire vit. Quand nous avons commencé, on n'avait pas d'unité. On avait de petites unités qui faisaient du riz de mauvaise qualité. À tel ancien qu'on taxait le riz de Côte d'Ivoire, du riz avec des cailloux. Il y a eu des efforts faits à ce niveau. Et pour encourager cela, le gouvernement a acquis environ une centaine d'unités d'environ 10 000 tonnes par an. On s'est rendu compte qu'en 2015-2016, ces unités ont fait le plein. C'était insuffisant. Donc, il fallait passer à une autre étape. Nous sommes en train de construire 30 usines de chacune 25 000 tonnes de padi. Il y a 15 qui sont actuellement achevées. Et d'ici avril, les 30 seront en fonction. Donc, pour cette période de 2012 jusqu'à aujourd'hui, nous avons eu vraiment des expériences. Premièrement, on s'est rendu compte en Côte d'Ivoire que la production au niveau des producteurs n'est pas un problème. Si les producteurs sont effectivement appuyés, ils produisent autant, même plus que notre quantité de consommation. Donc ça, c'est réglé. Le deuxième problème, comme vous l'avez dit, et ça, quand au début, on le disait à nos autorités, ils ne croyaient pas, on leur disait, pour développer le riz dans un pays, il faut commencer par les usines. Ils disent, mais ce n'est pas possible. Je dis, mais le paysan ne produit pas du riz, il produit du padi. Si vous produisez du padi, que vous n'avez pas une trame industrielle pour acheter ce padi et le transformer, il va diminuer sa production, la réserver à l'autoconsommation. Donc très vite, on a pu en convaincre l'État. On a mis en place une centaine d'unités auprès des coopératives. Même là aussi, on est arrivé à nos limites. Donc il fallait aller à une autre étape. C'est ainsi que nous avons acquis 30 usines de chacune 25 000 tonnes. Mais en Côte d'Ivoire, nous avons une particularité. L'État ne doit pas être dans toutes ces histoires-là. L'État les fait venir et ça répond à un besoin bien précis parce que les privés qui étaient arrivés avaient chacun son plan, mais qui ne correspondait pas forcément au plan de développement de l'État de Côte d'Ivoire. Donc, l'État dit, bon, dans ce cas, moi je prends les divans, j'installe les usines et puis je les cède. Ce sont des protocoles bien particuliers. C'est ce que nous avons fait. Je pense que les 30 vont arriver d'ici juin, toutes les 30 usines seront fonctionnelles. Donc, à ce niveau, on aura résolu un problème. Le dernier problème qui reste, c'est le problème du financement. J'espère qu'on va en parler. C'est un gros problème auquel nous sommes confrontés. Faire fonctionner une usine qui doit acheter le padi cash, quand nous avons fait le calcul, c'est en millions de milliards de francs CFA. Parce que vous voyez, c'est un montant très important. Et nous avons rencontré toutes les banques depuis 2012. Elles n'ont pas répondu. Elles ont fait leurs investigations, le riz que vous produisez est compétitif, il faut essayer. Mais les risques sont encore là, on vous demande de mettre en place un fonds de garantie. Quand on va vers l'État, l'État dit, ah, moi je ne suis pas prêt pour mettre un fonds de garantie. Donc il fallait trouver une solution. Et ce qui nous a sauvés, c'est que la première usine, il y a 15 qui sont achevées, mais il y a une sur laquelle on avait une option précise. On dit, on va utiliser cette usine comme usine pilote. Il a dû voir un peu comment cette usine travaille, quel riz ça sort, quels sont les problèmes qui sont en sort de cette usine de Korogo. Et il fallait trouver l'argent. Là, on avait le dos au mur. Heureusement, en dernière minute, nous avons une banque qui a mis en place le système et qui a demandé comme assurance qu'on mette en place un système avec tiers détenteur. Tiers détenteur pour le padi, tiers détenteur pour le riz, et qui permet un refinancement par la banque. Donc c'est ce que nous avons expérimenté. Je pense qu'aujourd'hui, la Côte d'Ivoire pratiquement a fait l'expérience à la fin de la production, la transformation, ainsi de suite. Concernant les relations avec l'Asie, à l'ONDR, pratiquement chaque année, pratiquement tous les cadres vont dans un pays, notamment d'Asie. L'Inde, moi j'étais en Inde, j'étais au Japon, on est un peu partout pour prendre des expériences. Et ces expériences, notamment en Inde, nous ont permis de comprendre une chose. C'est la résolution du problème de la qualité du riz lié aux opérations post-récolte. On a beau dire en Afrique, les paysans ne sèchent pas bien, ici, c'est là. Mais en Inde, ils ont trouvé la solution. On ne sèche plus en milieu paysan. L'usinier a une relation avec le producteur. Et c'est l'usinier qui pratiquement dit au producteur, c'est le moment de récolter. Dès qu'il récolte, il vient prendre. Donc, toutes ces opérations qui sont là sont faites à l'usine. Ce qui fait qu'en Côte d'Ivoire, la plupart des usines que nous avons actuellement, nous avons équipé toutes les séchoirs pour éviter toute manipulation en milieu paysan et pour aller vite. Ensuite, la dernière étape qui nous restait, c'était la gouvernance même de notre industrie du riz. La gouvernance. Heureusement, ça nous a mis 2 ans. Nous avons mis en place une interprofession comprend le collège des producteurs, le collège des transformateurs, le collège des usiniers, le transformateur, le collège des distributeurs, qui aujourd'hui commence à fonctionner et qui va être un élément très important dans les décisions, notamment sur les problèmes de caractérisation, sur les problèmes de prix, tout un tas de problèmes qui seront à côté de l'État pour faire avancer tout ça. Et pour ceux qui suivent l'actualité en Côte d'Ivoire, l'Office national de développement de la riziculture, dont je suis le directeur général, est passé en agence pour le développement, agence d'exécution pour le développement de la filière. C'est totalement différent. Parce que quand on était ONDR, c'était un établissement public national qui avait des contraintes. Pour commander de l'engrais, vous mettez 6 mois. Le cycle du riz, c'est 4 mois. Donc, il y avait tout un tas de problèmes qui faisaient qu'on n'avançait pas. On avait l'argent budgétairement, on ne pouvait pas consommer. Là, maintenant, on a une agence d'exécution qui a un contrat plan avec l'État de Côte d'Ivoire qui dit, bon, voilà ce que vous devez faire. Voilà le résultat que vous devez avoir. Et pour cela, nous avons tel moyen à mettre à votre disposition. Je pense que tous les systèmes sont pratiquement mis en place aujourd'hui pour que vraiment le cap fatidique de 1 400 000 tonnes qu'on puisse répartir. Et ensuite, il y a un problème qui nous concerne tous ici. Je ne sais pas si c'est la Banque mondiale est là, tout le monde est là. Et nous sommes attaqués par le Nigeria, par le Niger, par le Ghana, parce qu'à la Côte d'Ivoire, il y a beaucoup de réexportation de la Côte d'Ivoire vers ces pays-là. Et ça perturbe leur développement, leur riz. Et c'est un problème de dysfonctionnement en Côte d'Ivoire au niveau de la régulation qui va être réglé bientôt. Et sur ce, nous allons prendre l'exemple du Sénégal, qui a bien réussi cette sphère-là. Donc, il y a beaucoup d'échanges entre nous qui nous permettent de voir ce qui est bien sur le parallèle, ainsi de suite. Aujourd'hui, je pense qu'on prendra beaucoup de choses de l'Asie et ce sera bénéfique pour nous tous. Je vous remercie.
First of all, I would like to wish a very fruitful year to all the participants to this meeting. And the World Bank is delighted to participate and to sponsor, this meeting, this workshop, let's say. It's good to know the background, the background. We all have projects, we are supporting rice and other commodities in Africa. But you know that some few years ago, the head of state of ECOWAS is the West Africa, what? Economic entity and political entity. And ECOWAS head of state have decided to launch what they call offensively, the rice offensive or initiative, And the objective is that they would like, they had, a target to be self-sufficient in rice I think it's going to change now, by 2020. But I'm sure this cannot be met, but at least it make the focus on rice, and it showed the government's commitment to do something on rice. And ECOWAS approached the bank with a letter to say to I'm sure also the other development partners to support this initiative to see how we can improve rice production, rice competitiveness in West Africa. So this is the background, how it comes. And we started first to support rice, productivity, increase of rice productivity through a project, the West Africa Agricultural Productivity Project, and working together with AGRA, JICA, and other, we try really to support increase in productivity, increase in production. But this, when we developed this project, we saw that the issue is not only productivity. You should look at, the overall competitiveness
of the rice sector. And when you look at competitiveness, you can see also that there are a lot of issues in each of the segments of the value chain. So you cannot just approach productivity, but you have to look at how the rice in the market will be a quality as good as the rice imported from, you know, other countries, Asian countries and others. So we have launched now a new program. It was, that is called West Africa Agricultural Transformation Project. And this program is under preparation. And for this program, we are focusing mainly on food, because when we started to develop this program, we look at, you know, the foresight studies that have been conducted by the CGS system. And they indicate that the three major issues that Africa and the world are going to face in the next 20, 15 years, 50 years, are food, jobs, and climate change. And this is going to affect, you know, all the value chains. So the WATEPE has decided to, you know, change the focus on productivity and look at the overall value chain, mainly increasing productivity, reducing post-harvest losses. You know that there are a lot of losses in Africa, while in developed countries it's around 0% loss, post-harvest loss. In Africa, according to FAO, is between 20 to 40% losses. So this is too high. So if we decrease the losses, it means that we are going to increase availability of food. At the same time, we have decided also on the WATEPE to look at, you know, the issue of marketing. So when you talk about marketing, so we have looked at the technology side, we are going to policy, and all these things. So this is a new project. So we also decided to focus on some commodities, and rice was coming as one of the major commodities, and selected by the African head of state and the ministries of finance. Each of the ministries, when we met with them, they say, look, rice is our priority. Each of them say, rice is our priority number one. So this is why, you know, this, you know, the background of this study. So what we said first, we need to look at what type of innovation we need to bring to increase, you know, the competitiveness of African rice. And with JICA, we had a lot of discussions, and we came up with this this initiative, I don't say study, initiative, to really see how we can, you know, have a competitive study to look at the value chains in Asia and in Africa, and see how we can learn from each other. Even Asian can learn also from us. Maybe we have more to learn from them, but they also can learn from us. So how we can learn from this and see how we can speed the transformation of the rice sector in Africa. Because the challenge would be big. If you look at China, for example, less and less farmland now. I was recently in China and I saw that, you know, even the villages, they are building, how do you say, gratte-ciel, skyscrapers, you know, in the villages, you know. So it means that there is a problem. They don't have enough land. So we need to think about, you know, how to feed the world, and Africa can play a key role if we start now. So this is the background, and I'm happy to see that here we have, I can see India, Cambodia, Thailand representatives here. Welcome. We are very happy. And besides the workshop, we hope that you can do a tour to a small tourist and see Cote d'Ivoire and West Africa. We are also happy to see that Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, Mali, Senegal, and Ghana are all present here, representatives, including all the colleagues and the people I have not mentioned who are here. And thank you for participating to this workshop. I hope that it will be very fruitful, and we all will have some good takeaway from this workshop. So thank you very much.